It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It is Sunday morning, the week of the election, after the election. We get to bookend right. Money Matters right before the election last week. And now that it's decided, we get to be early and being able to wrap this up. The cover of Barron's I got out of my driveway this morning. Sometimes they're late and I don't get it until Sunday morning. But the commentary was the most extraordinary election of our time. I can't disagree with it. Democrats and Republicans argued over the results, but the stock market staged the biggest election performance week since 1932. Whoa! Last Sunday, we were talking about how terrible markets were and how tough the week before was. And then this week, we had one of the best weeks. Again, the best election week since 1932. And then the best week in general since that we were just starting to recover from the pandemic peak fear back in late March, early April. And here we stand in the article that you'll find in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which is published today, Sunday column, in the business section, is titled, or at least I titled it, Gridlock is good. Now, it's something like that. The AJC, for some reason, no matter how good my title is, they always change it. I'll put it in, I think, the best. No matter how good it is, they want to change the title. But it's something like gridlock is good. There was this thought, this worry about a blue wave. We're going to get hit by a blue wave. Instead, Americans voted for a purple haze. Cue the Jimi Hendrix, because that is exactly what Americans voted for. And the reason, and I think by now we already know this because we've been talking about it all week, the reason we saw a 1,000-plus point rally, Dow Jones up almost 7%, S&P 500 up over 7%, I mean, massive up move in the market this week. It's not because we had a good jobs report. It's not because manufacturing numbers were so good. It's because gridlock is good, and that's what America voted for. It wasn't a blue wave. It wasn't this, everything Democrat, Senate, House, White House. No. We are getting gridlock in Washington. Now, this obviously is subject to change. There's not a guarantee on this because there are no guarantees in life. But we also know that the two Senate races here in Georgia will determine the Senate. And I can tell you, this is the phenomenon I've been able to, I'm fortunate, I think, to live in a world, and I think a lot of Americans are like this. Very few of you can say, well, my entire family, even Uncle Bob, is the same political party. We all live in these worlds where you may have mostly friends that think the same way, but there are going to be people in your life that also think on the other side of the political spectrum. I happen to live in one of these houses. The Wall Street Journal actually wrote about this as a politically divided marriage. One votes for Republican and one votes for Democrat. That's me. My wife's from a super liberal family. She says she's independent. Her family is not even close to being independent. They're in Michigan, in that Ann Arbor, ultra-liberal territory. And when I get together with them in the summers, they've pounded me for years and years about being more of a conservative. How can you like President Trump? He's the worst person in the world. And I've lived with that over and over and over again. I can tell you their celebration is absolutely through the roof. But what's interesting here is that on this eve of, let's say it's the eve of after the election, is that what I've found with the Democratic Party, and this again, I live with my wife's more voted for Biden, is that that's all they wanted. They didn't want a blue wave. They didn't want to see the Senate. They didn't want to see the House stay blue and gain blue and the Senate go blue and Joe Biden. They really just didn't want Trump. And that's what they got. So it's hard for me, and I'm not a political strategist, but it's hard for me to believe that the same people that voted Trump out are going to be as enthusiastic about voting here in Georgia. Now, they may be. They may very well be. I don't know. But I think, judging from my network, which is relatively large in looking at a divided world, again, the folks that I can look around and talk to about politics, about half of them are very conservative, and I've got plenty on the left. But what I've seen from the left now is that they pretty much got what they wanted. And they're not here necessarily they're going to be totally fine. In fact, one of my very best friends from University of North Carolina, just texting with him this morning, who, again, is a Democrat. By the way, back in college, I don't think we even talked about politics. Didn't even talk about politics till well after we started to actually grow up a little bit. But he's a very staunch Democrat and loves the result of he got Biden. And he said, you know what, Wes, you're right. The Senate staying Republican is really probably the very best thing for this economy. That's coming from a Democrat. So really, I should have titled my story on this Sunday that is gridlock is good. It's really a little something for everyone. It's almost like we woke up on the eve of Thanksgiving and underneath the tree is a little something for everyone in this election. Now, by the way, so blue wave out as far as I can see, purple haze in as far as I can see. And now Georgia, by the way, becomes the center of the economic universe, because it is now these two Georgia runoff Senate races that determine the control of the Senate. Think about the microscope that our state has been under for 2020. This is the year where Georgia grew up. You know, we had the Olympics, and that put us on the map as a place that people really paid attention to. But I think 2020 was through Georgia fully into the national vanguard. We were what? The very first state to reopen. Our economy reopened with great incredulation, if that's even a word. I can't believe you're reopening. How can your governor do this? How irresponsible is this? Well, it proved out that ultimately Georgia, and you, again, you may disagree with me on this, but it looks as though we were early in reopening, but our economy's done very well. And we have always been this wonderful microcosm of the United States economically, because we're not a one industry state. If you think about Texas, so much of Texas is about oil, and so much of New York is about finance, and so much of California is about tech. Here in Atlanta and the state of Georgia, we have pretty much every industry that it relatively well balanced. So as our economy goes here in Atlanta and the state of Georgia, so goes the rest of the United States economy. So we were first to reopen, spotlight on Georgia, that actually did go better than most naysayers said it would. And now here we are only a few months later, after the greatest and most voted in presidential election or political season of our life. Now we have another 2 months until the January runoffs, where we are again under the spotlight, because how these two races go, so goes the U.S. Senate. And as long as one of the two win, we will have both of the Republicans win, we will have a divided Senate, or we will have divided government, or a split Congress, meaning that we will have a Republican Senate, we'll have a Democratic House, and that means gridlock. It means that no lopsided policy can just get jammed through. It also means that, by the way, if the Republicans stay or continue to have control of the Senate, they have to approve Joe Biden's cabinet. So think about what that means. That means that no ridiculous posts. That means no AOC to run the Treasury Secretary. No Elizabeth Warren, left-wing radical, if I may, to run something really important. There will have to be grown-ups in the room that are approved by the Senate for these cabinet seats. And I think that is a wonderful example of how this gridlock and the checks and balances of our system are supposed to work. If you think about third grade social studies, and I get reminded of this every year as my kids go through elementary school, because what I've learned as a parent is that they kind of study the same thing every single year after year after year, but they build on it. So I remember thinking this year, my kids were learning about the topography in the different regions of the state of Georgia. So the Blue Ridge and the Savannah and the plains and all the different regions, let's say, of our state. And I said, well, I thought you learned about that in second grade and then in third grade and then in fourth grade and then in fifth grade. It's because we continue to build on it. It's the same thing when little kids study politics. They start learning about our government in second or third grade, and then they build on it every year. And the one thing that they continue to say that I remember still from being in elementary school is this wonderful balance or this wonderful thought of checks and balances. And when you're a little kid, you just think, oh, well, yeah, it's a check and a balance because this, you have all these different branches of government, and they are meant and set up by our founding fathers to make sure that you don't get one particular party that just is able to do whatever they want. And that's exactly what we got in this election. And that's why I go back to my third grade social studies and say, wait a minute, isn't that the way it's supposed to be? The check and the balance? And it is. And that's exactly where I think we land. And that is why the stock market celebrated. Stock market is okay with a Biden White House. But I think that what they're really happy about, investors, and I can tell you, this is a huge sense of relief for me, is that I don't see any major legislation coming. No massive tax hikes. We talked about taxes for months and months here, really all year long leading up to the election. I drew out a tax chart, what the Biden proposed tax plan showed. Some of those tax increases for business owners were astounding, scary to me. That seems to be off the table because divided government and checks and balances are exactly the way that this thing was supposed to be set up. And it creates this environment where nothing lopsided or crazy is able to get through. And the market showed us this week with a massive rally just how important and positive that is for us as Americans in this economy. You're listening to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Small. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning, post-election. And if I had to name today's show would be gridlock is good. Gridlock is good. The blue wave out, purple haze in. Now Georgia becomes the center of the economic universe as we have been really all through 2020 here in the United States. And now politically, as we have two massively important Senate races that will determine control of the U.S. Senate. Both Republicans led. Well, if you look at it this way, David Perdue, of course, led Ossoff in his race, but he didn't quite get to 50%, so there has to be a runoff. Loeffler and Collins, the two Republicans, had, if you take the two and look at their votes, they were about 600,000 votes ahead of Warnock. So again, that's going to be another race. We'll see how that goes. But as long as one of those two races goes to the Republicans, we've got gridlock. It really creates this wonderful check and balance for the entire U.S. government. And that's exactly why markets really cheered and are looking toward the betting odds are certainly that the Republicans will have control of the Senate, the Democrats, even though Republicans picked up lots of seats, actually, in the House, and of course Joe Biden now in the White House. Having that Republican control is so important in the Senate for the gridlock that the markets want. Last week we talked about three outcomes. We said the first outcome that the media was really talking about would be a blue wave. What does that mean for stocks? The second, though, we talked about is a Biden presidency with a split Congress. Well, that's what we got. We talked about how that looks as far as if you go back in history and you say, okay, what happens when we have this divided government? Well, of all the combinations or political combinations you can find, whether you see blue wave, red wave, a Democrat president, and then a split Congress or a Republican president, a split Congress, or what we have arrived to here on this Sunday morning is the best historical outcome for stocks. And that's what you'll probably read over and over again over the coming weeks here is that this type of split Congress, this combination in White House, this combination of gridlock has been the average annual return for this political environment, average annual return is almost 14%, 13.6% per year on average. A blue wave, still okay, still good, 9.3%. A red wave, about 8.7%. But when you look historically and you find government gridlock, the markets do really well. So I think that's the sense of relief that I felt, I think a lot of Americans felt. And then the market really showed us that sense of relief of, okay, we've got divided government. We don't have to worry about anything massively new or changing happening. And really a kind of a sigh of relief. So instead of the blue wave, Americans delivered a purple haze. It was option number two from our list last week. Biden president, split Congress. The market didn't even blink. Didn't even blink. Next day, up something like 600 some points in the Dow. Then the next day, up over 500 points. Just a very clear message from stocks saying, hey, it's going to be okay. Hey, guys, it's going to be okay. May not have been the election outcome that you wanted, or it may have been the perfect election outcome that you wanted. Either way, what matters as investors, we've got to deal, we got to play the cards that we're dealt. And the cards that we are dealt as investors for this economy, pretty darn good. You listen to Money Matters. Straight ahead, we're going to talk about what else is on hold in this economy. The Fed, jobs numbers, gridlock is good. Stay tuned. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. Just a sense of relief, I think. Whether you're excited or not about the election results, just remember that a divided government is a good government, not a blue wave. We didn't get a blue wave. We get more of like a purple haze, and the market celebrated that. It looks as though, if you're just joining us, we're going to have divided government. My article for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution today, which is in the business section, is essentially saying that gridlock is good. And we know that of all the different outcomes that we were expecting this year, we had three from this past week. We talked about this last week. We had three options, whether it was a blue wave, a Biden presidency, and a split Congress, or a red wave. Those are really the three. Turns out option number two on the table, that's what we got, or what's most likely we're going to get. We still have two runoffs, obviously, here in the state of Georgia. But if they go Republican, or at least one of them goes Republican, then we have divided government. We have a split Congress, and the markets certainly like that. So that means that the major legislation, unless it's bipartisan, and by the way, how great is that? Unless it is bipartisan, unless it is something that we can agree on as Republicans and Democrats, it's not going to get done. That means that they're not going to change healthcare, and no radical changes in healthcare. Okay, that's good. No radical changes in taxes. Okay, that's good. Why is that good, by the way? And there's some other things on hold, too. By the way, Federal Reserve came out this week, didn't move interest rates, kept interest rates at zero. And they essentially said they're going to continue to do that as well. So now think about this. We have a Federal Reserve and a monetary authority that says they're very open and very transparent and saying, look, hey, America, we know that we're not out of the coronavirus economy pandemic just yet. We're still in this COVID economy. We are a six-cylinder engine. We're operating on probably five cylinders right now. Pretty good. Lots of recovery. We had a V-shaped bottom, but not a full V-shaped recovery because we're not back to where we were in 2019. Yes, we lost 21 million or 22 million jobs because of the pandemic and because of the government shutdowns and the lockdowns, the great lockdowns of 2020 here in the United States and around the world. Here in the United States, we lost about 22 million jobs. We've gotten back 12 million of those jobs. The reopening in May and April, or May and June and July and August, continues. This past month, we just got a jobs report for the month of October. We added almost 700,000 new jobs here in the United States, and the unemployment rate, which was over 7%, dropped to under 7%. That means we're continuing to make progress, but we have another 10 million jobs. We need 10 million new jobs, 10 million hires to get back to where we were in 2019. So we are this massively important, highly productive economic society, and we're not back to full six cylinders. We're back to probably five of the six. The Federal Reserve knows that, and the Federal Reserve has said, look, we're going to stay on hold. No big changes from the Fed. Interest rates are going to stay essentially as low as they've ever been in the history of the world. That makes everything a little bit cheaper, everything a little less expensive to finance. And the certainty to business owners and consumers, if you're thinking, hey, honey, should we buy a house? We know that interest rates will probably stay pretty darn low for a very long period of time. That gives this economy a tailwind to get back to where we were. Fed on hold. Fed stability. Fed able to allow you to make some decisions because they've created this very transparent environment that tells us, hey, look, rates are going to be low. We're not going to have any major spikes in interest rates probably anytime soon. Okay, on hold. Thank you. Same thing with now divided government. It means that we don't have to imagine here you are as a business owner. And you're sitting here looking at what could have been a blue wave. And you're saying, well, wait a minute. I was listening to Money Matters all of 2020, and they talked about that West guy on Money Matters talked about how my taxes could go from 37% to 52% as a business owner. What? Well, think about that in the back of your head. You're making decisions. Imagine the uncertainty that you're operating in. Imagine the uncertainty of saying, my taxes could go up by 30, 40, 50%. That weighs into big decisions. Hey guys, should we open up another office? Should we invest in a new technology? Well, I'd like to, and I think we can, but wait a minute, what if all of our taxes go through the roof? Then maybe then we're maybe too tight in financially in order to do that. So what do? We don't invest. Uncertainty leads to a lack of investment. Uncertainty leads to a lack of risk-taking. Uncertainty leads to really getting stuck, and it stifles progress. And that's what I think we're seeing here now, why the market was excited about the result of gridlock, is that if you're going to have an environment where the Fed is on hold, the largest and most important monetary authority on the planet is transparently saying, look, no interest rate hikes for a very long time till this economy gets back fully up and running. And by the way, that won't happen until we get a full game-changing medical solution, meaning that the people, there's a vaccine is announced and it's effective and people take it. And a therapeutic is announced and people say, you know what, even if I get COVID, the chances that just that fraction of a percent of it going really bad, now that's mostly eliminated because of some sort of medical announcement, therapeutic or vaccine, we are able to now get back to normal life. And all of a sudden, now we are back to an economy that is then fully up and running and then without the worry of major policy changes. Hey, I feel okay now that I know my taxes aren't going to go through the roof. I feel good now that the Federal Reserve is saying transparently, look, we're not going to raise rates until this economy is back up and running, which we know will be a little while as well. So we have stasis to some extent. We've heard that word a bunch this week, or at least I have on the financial channel. We have an environment where we know nothing major is coming down the pike, at least from policymakers. And that's a welcome environment. For whether you're a consumer ready to make a decision or you're a business owner thinking about making a decision economically, you now have much more confidence and much more guidance knowing that you're not Wile E. Coyote. All of a sudden, everything seems okay. And then you look down and you've already gone past the edge of the canyon. Whoa, it's a long way down. That, I think, is off the table here. Now, I know that that can change, and I know that things can happen in government, and there can always be changes here, but the environment, I think, that we are now saddled up to go on this long trail ride is an environment of nothing major being able to get done. And on the surface, that might sound bad, but it's not bad at all, because really, nothing major can get done unless both sides say, hey, this is a good idea for America. It's a good idea for Republicans. And it's a good idea for Democrats. And hey, guys, let's do something we haven't done in a long time. Let's do this together. Let's actually agree on something from both sides and pull ourselves together as a nation and pull ourselves together to make joint economic decisions. That is on top of the miracle that is already the United States economy. Right. I was prepared to talk about here on this Sunday morning. I was prepared to talk about a blue wave. And what would I have said if we had a blue wave? I would have said, you know what? As bad as that is, because we now could have these major policy changes on the horizon that we don't know about. When's this going to happen? What are they going to repeal? What are they going to change in taxes? I would have said and told you, hey, look, the results for a blue wave are still okay. The United States economy has had, we've experienced this before. We've had political environments where we had really one party be under control. And the U.S. economy still did pretty well. And the stock market did pretty well, about 9% per annum. And the reason it did well is that it's the most immutable force, well beyond the power of politics, is the productivity, the army of productivity of the American worker. We did a whole show on that a couple of weeks ago. The army of productivity that is you, you listening, our absolute army, 150 million Americans wake up every day and they say, hey, I got to feed my family. I got to put food on the table. I got to make sure I have a roof over my head. That drives us as Americans. Well, guess what? About half of Americans work for small business. The other half work for big companies. A big chunk of those big companies are the S&P 500, the companies that you invest in inside your 401k. And if you have a workforce, half of America that's working for them, waking up every day with the human drive and desire, the survival drive to put food on the table and shelter your family, is very much in alignment with what these big companies want too, and that's growing earnings. And guess what? That's what we all invest in. We invest in the most productive economies or the most productive companies in the most productive economy here in the United States, the S&P 500. We may invest in the whole thing, or we may pick and choose what companies we like. The workforce in America is very much aligned with what these companies are trying to do, and that's grow earnings every single quarter, over and over and over again for years and decades. And quite frankly, there's a lot of them still. You can open up the S&P 500 and you can say that there are companies in there that have been doing this not just for years and decades, but over a century. And that is not going to change. So if we had a blue wave, I still would say, look, this economy is going to be fine. Yes, it's more uncertain. It's going to be, there's more landmines, I think, to navigate. And it's trickier and it's a little more uncertain. But I'm awake here on this Sunday morning. And as we have this time together, that's not the message that I have, because we don't have to. To some extent, a lot of those landmines are off the table. So we can wake up here on a Sunday morning and say, whew, it's a pretty good environment. I thought it was going to be good. Turns out it's great. Thought it was going to be good. Turns out it's a great environment. We really, again, depending on which team you wanted to win, certainly you could be more or less excited here. But I can tell you economically, the team that is most divided and split, where nothing big could get done, that's the team you want on the field. And that's the team we got. So God bless here on a Sunday morning. I feel as though I have had and this isn't necessarily for one candidate or the other. And you keep hearing about, oh, America feels this great relief. Oh, it's a weight off my shoulders. The weight off my shoulders is, wow, we got divided government. I love it. And that's the environment we're set up in. And as an investor, if you're listening to this show, that's exactly the team that you want on the field. You're listening to Money Matters. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. You know, Clark Howard did this fascinating piece this week on, heard it a couple different times, on let's call it a non-fascinating topic, which made it fascinating. It was on appliances. It talked about it. It was interesting. Normally you walk into, and he was spot on this. The thought was essentially that normally in the normal non-COVID economy, you walk into a Williams-Sonoma. I don't even remember where you buy appliances. I think that's where I'm typically would go in to maybe buy a coffee maker. And you'd see there like 15 different coffee makers. And you could buy any of them, right? Blenders. There's 20 blenders. You could toasters, blenders, coffee makers. And any one of them you wanted, you'd say, I want that one. They'd say, okay, I'll go to the back and I'll grab one for you. Or once in a while you say, I want that one. Oh, you know what? That's out of stock for today. We'll get it to you on Monday. Okay, that's how I remember appliance shopping. But it's not like that right now. COVID is the shutdowns from the spring have still created these supply chain disruptions. So we don't have a normal supply of a lot of different products here in the United States that we've to some extent usually take for granted. So inventory is so constrained that appliance repair shops are the busiest they've ever been. Appliance repair shops are really backed up because not only can you maybe not buy an appliance, you say, well, I'll just get one of these things fixed. And the appliance repair shops are swamped because so many people, A, we have a limited supply, and B, we're in our homes more, and we've been using our appliances, I guess, and this makes sense, and this is from Clark's piece, I guess we've been using our appliances more. So it's pretty interesting. We've had this overuse or more than normal use, wear and tear, more miles on our toaster, and now we need a new one. And so that's a perfect example why this economy, it's not just demand, but if you've tried to, this is both on the product side and the service side, it's hard to not only have we been more cautious about our spending and there's less things to do because we're not going to concerts and we're not going on trips as much as we may be used to because of COVID, there's also not quite the economy to be able to spend money on. There's a lack of supply. You want to go make an appointment at XYZ service. It used to be, hey, come on in Friday. Now it's, oh, we can get you in 2 weeks. We can get you in 3 weeks. So it's both ends of the economic spectrum, and that's what will continue to heal. What's fascinating to me is that Georgia now becomes the center of the economic universe. And it's long been a proxy for the U.S. economy, but think about it. Travel hub. We've got Coke and Home Depot and UPS and all these companies here, Fortune 500, and it's so diversified that we will continue to be, particularly because Wall Street is watching the two upcoming Senate races. There's two runoffs that will either continue to keep gridlock in or not. I think it really will. I think we're going to see gridlock, and that will be a focus here on Money Matters. So have a wonderful rest of your weekend. Bulldog Brunch coming up. Stay tuned to the best program on the planet. You can find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Have a wonderful Sunday.